Second case for oral argument this morning is Thomas Harbert appellant versus State Farm Fire and Casualty appellee. For the appellant is Mr. Lee Schoenbeck, an attorney from Watertown. For the appellee, State Farm, is Ms. Susan Sabers, an attorney from Sioux Falls. Justice Sabers has disqualified himself, and the court has appointed the Honorable Tim Tucker, a circuit judge from the Third Judicial Circuit, to sit in Justice Sabers' place. Mr. Schoenbeck, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. It would please the court, counsel, and clerks. I appreciate the opportunity to be before you today to argue this case about an insurance contract and the rule of law. And if I might, I'd like to go through a couple of points from the record. It's a fairly short record. A couple of principles about the interpretation of insurance contracts, and then dive into the issues that are presented before the court by the briefs. The record, settled record 58, 59, and 60 is the policy amendment, and the bulk of the case is that is the law contract of the case. There are two paths to coverage that you'll see in the policy amendment. It's an umbrella policy. One of the paths to coverage is bodily injury, which requires an accident and has a general intent and intentional acts exclusion. The other independent path to coverage is personal injury, which does not require an accident, which includes a number of intentional torts, including amongst those rights of privacy, an undefined term within the policy, and it has an enhanced coverage for the intentional acts exclusion. It requires a specific intent to injure or do harm. It's an intentional acts exclusion, because otherwise the coverage would be illusory in the personal injury area, because all of the coverage in that umbrella policy is for intentional acts. That's the settled record with respect to the policy. The amended complaint is attached to the filed amended complaint is attached to the brief. And that provides that alleges alienation of affection and invasion of rights of privacy. When you're looking at insurance contracts, I think the rules on interpretation of insurance contracts that apply here, there are just a couple, and they're pretty straightforward. State Farm has a burden to show that this is clearly outside the coverage. If there's coverage on the face of the pleadings, the review virtually ends. Use plain meaning for words, and if it is fairly susceptible to two different interpretations, use the one that favors the insurer. And if we use those rules of law and apply the rule of law to this insurance contract, I believe this court is going to find that, in fact, there should be insurance coverage in this setting. When we briefed this on behalf of Tom Harbert, we broke into three issues. There really are just two paths to coverage. But the first issue, you'll see, I put it all on one page in the brief. And the reason I did is I wanted to make the point that this court has made in Hawkeye Security and they made in Beagler, which is that if it's alleged, and if there appears to be coverage on the face of the complaint for something provided for in the policy, then the review ends. That's what you said in Hawkeye Security. And so I put it on one page because it seems to me that that ought to be the end of this debate. But we aren't. I think we aren't, because it's an interesting issue, one that's been litigated in courts across the country, and so we dive forward. The second topic addressed in my brief has to do with the personal injury exclusion. If you look at the personal injury, again, I would point out there is no issue about accident or loss. That's not part of the definition in the area of personal injury. You have to look at rights of privacy. And I think when you look at these briefs, you have a strange situation confronting you. I would wager that you have never had an insurance contract dispute in front of this court before where the insured was saying, read the language of the policy, and the insurance company was refusing to talk about the language of the policy, because this policy provides coverage for rights of privacy, plural.
Let me interrupt right there, because what are the recognized elements of the cause of action for deprivation of a right to privacy, and what's the source of your, what's your authority for that, for the elements of that cause of action?
I have not laid out the elements to the rights of privacy. I've described the body of law in our brief from cases where this court described rights of privacy. And while I've set the cases out, I would generally describe them as wrongful intrusion into one's private activities. But that's what this court, that's the language this court has used to describe invasion of rights of privacy.
While you're on that subject, can you tell me, are the facts that you use to support your claim that there's coverage for alienation of affections the same facts you use to support your claim that there is a invasion of right of privacy coverage?
I don't have any support to facts to support either. I'm the person being sued. Tom Harbert is the so all I have is, and this court has said we look at the pleadings, and the pleadings allege invasion of rights of privacy and alienation of affection. I at this stage of the proceeding, whatever facts there are to support those underlying cause of action, that's the challenge that the person suing my client has.
So the same allegations that support one support the other.
I think that that's a fair statement. It gets to this Pickering issue, which where this court says, I don't care what you call it, what we're going to do with all of them is you're going to pursue them under alienation of affection in the underlying tort. One of the challenges in this whole DEC action is that we keep getting confused with the underlying tort standards into the DEC action standards, because in the DEC action, there we only care what the contract says. And the contract says rights of privacy are covered. If, in fact, that allows the State Farm in the underlying action to somehow get some part of the case dismissed based on Pickering, that's fine. I hope they do. But for our purposes, in the DEC action, you look at the contract and see, is there an allegation that falls within the definitions of the contract?
Well, the Eighth Circuit looked at the same language and came up with a different conclusion than you're arguing.
No, thank you, Justice. They did not have the personal injury provision. They had only the bodily injury provision. At the trial court level, counsel, either because they didn't have a complaint that alleged violation of rights of privacy or they chose not to make the argument, that part of the policy that requires the showing of specific intent and that deals with rights of privacy and where there is no accident issue, none of that was before the Eighth Circuit. Remember, there's two independent paths to coverage here. If I might charge forward, the Munson case refers to marital relationships as part of the rights of privacy. This policy does not define rights of privacy. State Farm, in their brief, did not discuss any of the body of law in South Dakota or in American jurisprudence with respect to defining rights of privacy, even though it's the coverage provision in the policy which controls. They waived with one exception, and the only discussion is nothing about the body of law except to say that the trial judge said that because the title of one chapter chosen by the Criminal Code Revision Commission and the Code Council was rights of privacy, that would then define the term for purposes of the insurance contract. That would not be the standards that we use in South Dakota for interpreting insurance contracts. If there are more than one reasonable interpretation, and certainly in the area of rights of privacy, one reasonable interpretation has to be the body of law handed down by this court about what's included within it. That was not discussed in any respect in the briefs by State Farm. And in fairness, the trial judge, they didn't offer any definition of that policy term to him either. He had to make one up. The specific intent exclusion, I think, is worth looking at. I want to point out that in the area of personal injury, there is only a specific intent exclusion, not a general intent. It's an enhanced coverage. And why that's important is, if you read State Farm's brief, you will not find anywhere where they argue that exclusion. General intent is the exclusion for bodily injury. The words, in fact, I went through it three times and had my paralegal just to make sure I wasn't blind or something. Specific intent is nowhere to be found in State Farm's brief. They have waived or not discussed or however this court wants to describe it, but that the exclusion that is the only one that applies is absent in its entirety from their brief. And when you look at specific intent, you need to look at what the contract says, because the rule of law here is that we apply the contract. We don't use parties' expectations about what they wish the contract said. And what the contract says is that you have to have an intent to injure or harm. Now that's, and you do not get, as you would in the underlying tort, the Vieter case where this court said you don't have to prove intent in an underlying alienation of affection. You can have presumed intent. You don't get that in a DEC action. In a declaratory judgment action, as this court spelled out in the Bollinger case, it said you have to look at you have to show actual intent if you want to avoid exclude coverage. And it's because of Justice Cardozo's quote that's set out there, which is that every act is really an intentional act. I mean, driving down the road and going into the ditch and hitting somebody would be excluded under intentional act coverage. If, in fact, you use the standard of presumed intent, that you assumed to presume the results of every act that you intentionally did. So in deck actions, it's a different standard. You can't get into this presumed intent. State Farm raises that their defense is in the personal injury area, that there is no insurance for intentional acts. And that's a common moniker you'll hear people throw around. And I would suggest to you that that's the coffee shop version of the law. When you look deeper and peel the onion back a little bit more, there is a different standard, and that is this. This court has said when somebody has tried to take coverage for negligence and stretch it to reach intentional acts, this court has said no. But there has never been a time, and there is not a case in State Farm's brief, nor a case we found in American jurisprudence, where an affirmative grant of insurance coverage was stricken because the company chose to write coverage for an intentional act. Because remember what happened here. This is a policy they sell nationwide. They're the largest seller of this umbrella policy in the country. They sell intentional, they write and sell intentional acts coverage. And then before this court, they make the argument that, in effect, the coverage that they sold, at least in South Dakota, should be illusory because you can't have insurance for intentional acts. Well, that isn't the standard, and that there's never been a case where a court has stricken an affirmative grant of insurance coverage from a policy under the theory that it was an intentional act.
Mr. Schoenbeck, what you're basically asking this court to do is recognize that this policy provides a fair insurance. If you have an affair, you're insured. Is that a good public policy for South Dakota to recognize?
That's a great question, Judge Tucker, because I think that's the only reason we're here is because of you can spin this case away from the rule of law and away from the contract to an argument about this is insurance for affairs. This is insurance for having sex. I mean, I've had a chance in this case to get to hear all of those arguments. I would say, first off, that the rule of law has to be the rule of law, whether you like the people involved, whether you like what the people do, what their religion is, what their color is. The rules that we follow in interpreting insurance contracts have to be the same for the popular as they are for the unpopular causes. So I first say that the rule of law needs to apply, and that's the rules for interpreting undefined terms in insurance companies and the rules about intents. The other thing about it is, I knew it was inevitable I was going to get up and have a sex discussion with the Supreme Court today, and I was trying to explain to my wife why my children couldn't come along. If you had a chance to look at what Judge Pearsall said, not everybody that has an affair intends to alienate the affection of somebody else's marriage, because when you don't get presumed intent, which you do get in an alienation of affection, cause of action, the underlying tort, you get that. But you do not, in an insurance setting under Bollinger, get that. Under Bollinger, the reality is some people may have relationships outside of marriage and not intend to harm the other spouse.
Wasn't that the defense floated in Veeder that didn't fly very well?
That's exactly right. In the underlying tort for alienation of affection, that defense doesn't work because you get presumed intent in an underlying action. But in an insurance coverage, when you look at an insurance contract, you don't get presumed intent. That's the Bollinger case. There, they have to show not just actual intent. In this case, because of the rule of law from that insurance contract, they have to show specific intent to injure or harm, an even higher burden. And it's the confusion of the standards in the underlying tort with the standards that apply in an insurance contract interpretation. Confusing the rules of law from the two are how come I get to have discussions about sex with the South Dakota Supreme Court. I don't think that we should have a standard that says public policy trumps contract language because we don't like a result. I think that's a reasonable expectation argument. I think State Farm's position in this case, they would not put this lipstick on that argument, but it is what they are saying, is that it's not reasonable to expect us to provide insurance for this kind of an event. I think that's the argument.
But does that argument stand up? Because Veeder said the reason we maintained this tort was because the legislature had authorized it and had not repealed it. Isn't that the public policy beginning and end?
That is the public policy why the tort exists, yes. In this deck action, the public policy doesn't have any, it's the contract policy, and State Farm has the absolute ability to control. You're not saying in South Dakota we're going to have insurance coverage under this standard umbrella policy for everybody that decides to have sex with somebody who's married, because State Farm has the absolute ability to write an exclusion or to define rights to privacy to exclude a cause of action that has been notorious in existence for over 70 years in the state of South Dakota. They have the ability to do that. When they choose not to do that, it is not right that they come to this court and argue what their reasonable expectation is to the exclusion of what the rule of law is about interpreting an insurance contract and what the body of law is about rights of privacy and what the body of law is about the specific intent.
Well, with I guess if we think about the specific intent and the factual dispute about what may underlie this right of privacy claim, it sounds to me like if you're to prevail here, we can't go any farther than duty to defend. It sounds to me like we, from your argument itself, we can't get to the indemnity question.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's the issue you, I think, always have in an insurance declaratory judgment action. If there's a factual question, some part of it may go back for trial, and this court has also said that the duty to defend is broader than the duty to indemnify. So they may be in a position to defend today and later dispute indemnity under the current state of the law without attempting to use some reasonable expectation arguments to avoid the contract language. The bodily injury, if I might, the second path to coverage, which is the one that where there does have to be an accident and there's a general intent exclusion about whether it's expected or intended from the perspective of the insured. I would just say this. What's interesting there, and Judge Pearsall had this issue in front of him, and he and State Farm's brief, everybody agrees that accident to intent is a cognitive continuum, and it's along that. So the exclusion and the coverage issue, accident and intent, are a related analysis. And again, you're going to end up back with the Bollinger case, which creates, by the way, a factual issue about intent or about what somebody was planning on doing. Because if you look at the Harn decision, this court, you laid out what I call the cognitive ladder. If you look in Harn, you said, if it's a foreseeable risk, that's negligence. If there's a substantial likelihood, it's probable, that's willful and wanton. If it's substantially certain, it is inevitable, that's intent. And if you intend the result, that is specific intent. That's the cognitive ladder. And if you take Bollinger, which says that you don't get presumed intent, you have to have actual intent in an insurance coverage case, then there's a factual dispute there on the bodily injury provision that's unavoidable.
Now, in Pankratz versus Miller, this court stated the acts which lead to the loss of affection must be wrongful and intentional, calculated to entice the affections of one spouse away from the other. You're saying that's a general intent?
Because then when confronted with that issue in Vieter, where the defense, as they always do in alienation cases, say, that sounds like that's like a specific intent element, or at least an intent element, and so you have to show intent, and they always ask for an instruction. And by the way, this is the underlying cause of action. This is not the deck action. This court, the Chief Justice's opinion, said that actual intent to alienate the affection of the spouse of another need not necessarily be shown if the defendant's conduct is inherently wrong and tends to and does have that effect. In other words, every person is presumed to intend the consequences of his voluntary act. You get a presumption that they intended those consequences in an alienation underlying tort. The Bollinger case specifically says and takes that very language and says, you do not get a presumption of intent in a declaratory judgment action. I hope I addressed the question. Thank you, Justice. Again, I would just say that I think State Farm's argument is a reasonable expectation argument. I think that's what public policy arguments really are. I think this court has always said that the rule of law is that we look at the contract. We have very clear rules on interpreting insurance contracts, and those should apply. I think it's a dangerous standard if we say that there are some causes we think aren't popular, and for those we're not going to apply the rule of law. And in fact, State Farm has 100% of the ability to control that result. They can amend the policy. They can define rights of privacy. They can create an exclusion. They have every ability to control the result. The one thing they should not be allowed to do is to not talk about the definitions, the terms that are in the policy, and then come to the court and argue that not their policy, but public policy should control. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenbeck. Sabres, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. We're not arguing here about a popularity contest. Mr. Schoenbeck gets up in front of you and argues we need to apply the rule of law. And he says we need to look at what this court has said. And that's exactly what State Farm is saying. And I want to go off of something Judge Tucker mentioned. And he was talking about general versus specific intent. 20 years ago in Pankratz versus Miller, this court said, even more importantly than their other discussion of intent, the defendant's acts must have been done to alienate the affections of the other spouse. They must have been, from the onset, calculated to entice away that affection. That is specific intent. That intent element is why this is not an accident under the bodily injury coverage. It's also why the personal injury coverage does not work, because Mr. Schoenbeck wants to deny it, but there is specific intent inbred into this cause of action. Pankratz is 20 years old now, 1987, written by Justice Sabres. Pickering, 1989. In Pickering, this court says, again, the defendant's actions must have been calculated from the outset to entice away the affections. Let's go to Veeder. Mr. Schoenbeck gets up and he says, well, in Veeder, you were really talking about presumed intent. No, you weren't. This court quoted approvingly from four different trial court instructions. When this court reviewed the trial court's instructions, it said, as it always does, we have to review those instructions as a whole. We're not going to single out one instruction and say whether that was error to give or to not give. We're going to look at the instructions as a whole and decide whether they adequately set forth the law. This court goes on to quote those instructions, which again say, one does not become liable for alienation of affections simply because he or she becomes the object of someone else's affections. Instead, that defendant's acts must have been done for the very purpose of accomplishing a diminution of that affection. Where does all of this language come from? The language actually comes from Pankratz 20 years ago. In Pankratz, Justice Sabres cites and quotes in large text format from the restatement second of torts dealing with the alienation tort. And it addresses exactly what Mr. Schoenbeck wants you to ignore here today. In the alienation tort, go back to Pankratz and its discussion of the restatement and its quotation of the restatement. It says, we're not talking about presumed intent. In the alienation tort, inherent in that tort is that from the outset, you set out to entice away those affections. That's how the restatement defines this cause of action, and that's how this court has repeatedly defined this cause of action over the last 20 years. So what does State Farm do? State Farm, 2 years, by the way, after this underlying action is initiated, they're finally presented with this complaint. Why 2 years later? Judge Pearsall issued his interim decision in the Pins decision and said, hey, guess what? I find that there could be a duty to defend here. There could be a duty to indemnify. Again, Judge Pearsall has since been reversed by the Eighth Circuit. But what happens? 2 years after this underlying action starts, they hand it over to State Farm, and State Farm takes a look. Let's take a look at that amended complaint, which is page 225 of your settled record. The allegations: the defendant's actions were wrongful, malicious, that the defendant set out intending to injure the plaintiff, that he wickedly, willfully, maliciously sought to prejudice the plaintiff, and to alienate her affection from her husband. Those are the allegations. Justice Konenkamp, you asked, are we talking about the same facts here? When we all of a sudden shift to the invasion of privacy, are we talking about the same facts? Absolutely we are. That's page 226 of the settle record. Paragraph 11 was added during the pendency of State Farm's summary judgment motion. The plaintiff in the underlying action hurries up, does an amended complaint, gets it on file. I believe it gets filed 2 days before the hearing. Here's what the allegation now is. Because of the defendant's actions, Same actions. There's no new allegations of actions. We just referred back to all of the actions I just talked about. Intent to injure, intent to alienate, willfully, wickedly, maliciously. That's what the amended complaint says. That's what the amended complaint says that then the plaintiff took to his insurance company and said, please defend me. This is a fair insurance. This is 100% a fair insurance. Paragraph 11 of the amended complaint, page 226, says, because of these actions, same actions, plaintiff was injured in his rights of privacy. A transparent attempt to trigger insurance coverage for this now invasion of privacy claim. Why is there no cause of action for invasion of privacy? First of all, legally we've reversed it. Mr. Schoenbeck says that there's a legally cognizable invasion of privacy claim here because defendant Mr. Colt's wife, Peggy Colt, had an affair with Tom Harbert. Peggy Colt allegedly told Harbert some personal information, so David Colt's been injured. That is the theoretical equivalent of me coming to this court and saying, my husband wears a wig and a fake mustache. My husband's listening back in Sioux Falls. He's embarrassed by that information. He believes that his rights to privacy have been invaded. He gets to sue you, the South Dakota Supreme Court, because you were the recipient of that information. There are no new allegations as to act. What Mr. Schoenbeck says is Mr. Colt gets to sue Mr. Harbert because he was allegedly the recipient of some private information. There was no wrongful disclosure, and if there was, it was on behalf of Peggy Colt. Do we have to get there? We don't. For more than 20 years, this court has been asked to abrogate this cause of action. I'm not asking that here today. What I'm asking you to do is go back and look at your case law about why you haven't. And you've repeatedly deferred to the legislature on that issue. But in Pickering, I think this court took a giant step in the right direction. In Pickering, this court was presented with an intentional, tortious interference with marital contract claim and an intentional infliction of emotional distress claim. This court said neither one is a cognizable cause of action. We already have a remedy for those allegations. You're stuck with alienation of affections.
Maybe you've already answered this question, but how do you address counsel's reliance upon the provision in Bollinger, which seems to say that there could be a duty to defend?
I don't think that either Bollinger or Wirtz is hurtful to State Farm's position. If this court wants to follow how I read Tri-State and Wirtz, you cannot just intend the act at some level. Every single act is at some level intentional. You have to intend the very specific injury that occurs. How I address that? Pankratz 20 years ago, Pickering 15 years ago, and Veeder. Every single decision from this Supreme Court in the last 20 years has said to have legal liability for the tort of alienation of affections, you must have intended this very specific injury from the very outset. I argued Pins to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and I briefed it. And what I was up against in Pins was a repeated argument that Tri-State and Wirtz hurt my case. I don't believe they do. When you read the Supreme Court case law, we've repeatedly said for the last 20-plus years that you have to have that intent to cause that specific injury. Now, let's say you don't. Mr. Schoenbeck's client has a delightful defense on the merits down below. Congratulations. He shouldn't be found guilty of the tort. Does that matter for coverage? No, it does not. Because when State Farm is handed a complaint, and the complaint is for alienation of affections, and the allegations are willful, wicked, malicious conduct, where the defendant set out to intentionally injure the plaintiff, that is 100% alienation of affections, and that is 100% excluded from coverage. It is not an accident to go out and have a voluntary, consensual affair with someone else's wife. That is not an accident. You can't trigger coverage under bodily injury. Why can't you trigger coverage under personal injury? Two reasons. Pickering is the best. We've already said you can't repackage this alienation claim as anything else. We can't just, I could call it murder, but that doesn't mean that it's a cognizable claim under South Dakota law.
How do we know it's repackaged at this point, though?
What?
How do we know it's really repackaged?
Well,
at this point, because... And I'm distinguishing again between duty to defend and duty to indemnify. At this stage, we don't know that it's repackaged, do we?
We do, Your Honor. In the amended complaint, with all due respect, on page 226 of the record, there is a reference back to all of the prior allegations. There are no new allegations as to actions. And whether we believe it to be repackaged or not, what Pickering says, what this court says in Pickering is, when you are talking about wrongful conduct that leads to the dissolution of a marriage, your sole remedy is alienation. Mr. Schoenbeck doesn't want to talk about alienation because he knows it's not an accidental claim and he's worried he's outside of coverage. So he wants to talk again about personal injury. Talk about personal injury. Pickering says you don't have that claim. And even if it does, the personal injury, as Mr. Schoenbeck likes to point out, is a specific intent requirement. Again, we go back. They're the same actions. We've got 20 years of case law where this court has said this really is a specific intent offense. I wanted to comment. Judge Von Wald's decision can be affirmed by this court if there's any basis in the record to affirm that. I think there's multiple pages of reasons to affirm that. Mr. Schoenbeck faults Judge Von Wald for going and looking at the criminal statutes for at some sort of definition on invasion of privacy. If you look at, and we're on page 59 of the settled record, if you look at the actual insurance policy at issue, when we talk in terms of personal injury, the language of the policy says the commission of an offense. It doesn't say the commission of an act. It says the commission of an offense, which I think is a direct relation back to the criminal statutes. Mr. Schoenbeck did cite a good deal of case law to this court about invasion of privacy. Again, he cites not a single case where the recipient of information was sued for an invasion of privacy, absent that recipient also being part of the disclosure. There's absolutely no proof here, and I don't want to get into disputed issues of fact because I don't think we have any, and Mr. Schoenbeck has to agree on that because he filed a cross motion for summary judgment at the trial court and represented to the trial court there were no disputed issues of fact. But when you talk about the invasion of privacy, legally it's backwards. He cites cases talking about this intrusion onto the rights of another, but in the end, the only factual allegation comes exactly right back to the alienation claim. This court has repeatedly said when you decide the issue of insurance coverage, you look to the complaint, and I urge this court to do that. Even the amended complaint, which Mr. Freeman below got on the record, I believe 2 days before the summary judgment hearing, says we've got wrongful and malicious acts. We have a defendant who intended to injure the plaintiff. We have wicked, willful, malicious acts that were intended to prejudice the mind of Peggy Cult against her husband, David Cult. That amended complaint is what was presented for a duty of defense and a duty to indemnify. And I would like to point out, and I believe it's still in the record, State Farm has defended the underlying action since day one. Even since Judge Von Wald issued his trial court decision that there was no duty to defend and similarly no duty to indemnify, State Farm has continued to defend that, awaiting this decision from the Supreme Court. The only reason the Harbert case was ever tendered to State Farm initially was, again, the pendency of Judge Pearsall's decision. My office personally, for instance, is defending 7 of these coverage actions as we speak. Once Judge Pearsall's decision came down, everyone who had been sued in the state for alienation tendered their cause of actions, tendered the complaints, and asked for defense from their insurance companies. So all throughout the state right now, we have insurance companies defending these. Mr. Schoenbeck giggles when he says he doesn't want to talk about sex here today. What his client did was a voluntary, consensual, adulterous affair. That's not an aspersion. That's a fact. It's present throughout the record in numerous instances. What his client wants this court to do is extend insurance coverage to that. He claims that State Farm's policy is somehow ambiguous, but he doesn't really cite to any language that's ambiguous. He really didn't want to argue about the alienation claim here today. He didn't want to argue about the bodily injury, because to get coverage under bodily injury, you need a loss, which is defined as an accident, and he knows that he does not have an accidental loss. What he tries to talk about is this invasion of privacy claim. Pickering says he can't go there. Now, that is an issue that Mr. Fritz, defending below, can make an argument on the trial court. The trial court did a beautiful job in this declaratory judgment action. This court has repeatedly said the declaratory judgment action should move forward first. Instead of denying its duty to defend, State Farm brought the action here and is here on appeal asking this court to rule as a matter of law, not as a matter of fact, as a matter of law, that invasion of privacy, when all you're talking about is wrongful conduct that leads to the dissolution of marriage, is called an alienation claim. Under the State Farm umbrella policy, there is no insurance coverage for that claim, regardless of the tack Mr. Schoenbeck wants to take. Yes, Chief. I'm sorry. I thought you had a question.
No, I didn't. I'm wondering if you were done.
I go back to 1956 and the Pearsall versus Colgan case. Pearsall talks a little bit about that presumed intent. And in Veeder, when that presumed intent language resurfaces, it's a direct quote again to Pearsall. I think where this court should spend most of its time is the last 20 years of case law, starting with Pankratz. Pankratz gets it right, and it gets it right moving forward. Pankratz is the case that cites the restatement second. And in that case, they flat out say we are not talking about presumed intent. We are talking about a cause of action that inherently involves an intent to alienate, an intent to injure, a specific intent to injure. It is that specific intent exactly that precludes insurance coverage for what Mr. Schoenbeck's client did here. What Pickering did was take a right step in the right direction. Pickering narrowed it. Instead of disposing of the alienation claim, Pickering said, when you're really talking about the facts that support an alienation claim, let's call a spade a spade. It is a cause of action for alienation of affections. So let's call it that. You can't call it other things. What Mr. Schoenbeck here did was 2 days before the summary judgment hearing, tried to get this hurry-up offense on the record and this invasion of privacy claim. Again, it is not legally cognizable. Even if it were, it is not covered under the policy because of this specific intent exclusion. And again, Mr. Schoenbeck's facts, the way he tries to legally apply the invasion of privacy cause of action, he's missing the actions of Peggy Kalt here. It's David Kalt suing Tom Harbert, saying, you stole personal information from me. He didn't steal anything from David Kalt, other than his wife. Peggy Kalt may or may not have disclosed information. We don't need to care. You cannot find a case under this or other state law where the person who contained information sues the recipient of that information where the recipient wasn't the discloser. And here, if Mr. Kalt has an issue with what his wife may or may not have said, he should take it up with his wife. It doesn't mean that State Farm's defending this cause of action. Again, this court can affirm Judge Von Wald's decision if there is any basis in the record to support that decision. I think there are a great deal of bases in the record to support that decision. Again, Judge Tucker called this a fair insurance, and that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly what it is a request for. This is not an accident. This is not something. We're not sure exactly why the legislature doesn't want to abrogate this cause of action. I will point out, Mr. Schoenbeck has cited to this court the Smith versus St. Paul Guardian insurance case. It's out of the Western District of Arkansas. It's 22 years old. It is his sole case that he can find where any court has published a decision, other than Judge Pearsall, who was reversed, where they found insurance coverage for alienation of affections. What happens in Arkansas? That's 22 years ago. 3 years later, the Arkansas state legislature abrogated the cause of action for alienation of affection.
But in South Dakota, it's been expanded rather than abrogated since Veeder.
I agree. I think that's fair to say. My point is the one court that found insurance coverage was faced just 3 years later with a legislative abolishment of that cause of action. We're not exactly sure why the legislature wants to keep it. The theory that comes up in the last 20 years of case law is that they hope that there is some sort of deterrent effect. If there is any sort of deterrent effect, which is a difficult argument to make, it's certainly blown away when you get to hand the bill for your adultery to State Farm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sabers. Mr. Schoenbeck, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Members of the court, I don't know if the legislature's response to this would be to abrogate the cause of action, and if they do, that's a political decision they would make. The issues here before us today are deciding the rules of law or applying the rules of law that apply. And if you notice, specific intent, which has to be talked about, it's the controlling part of the policy provision. It's the exclusion not mentioned in the brief. And I think because it's not mentioned in the brief, that's why I heard counsel get up and say that Pankratz, that's how you address specific intent. But that argument that you heard from counsel that you have to have specific intent for alienation of affection is exactly the argument this court has rejected in alienation of affection cases. This court has said you can have presumed intent, and the Vieter decision can't say it any clearer than it does. And that's the issue in the underlying case. In the DEC action, and because in the underlying case you can prove the intent with a presumption, you can have, in fact, an insured who didn't want to bust up a marriage, who may have and can be alleged under alienation of affection to have done that because his acts are presumed to intend that result, but not in the DEC action. In the DEC action, you cannot have that presumption. I want to talk about this repackaging issue because, again, this is about taking an underlying tort and trying to intersperse it with the standards in the DEC action. The package for purposes of the declaratory judgment action is State Farm's written package in the policy. It is that if there are acts that are alleged that are within the violation of rights of privacy, then there is coverage. That is a completely separate question to what you choose to call those acts for which there is coverage, what you choose to call them in the underlying case. In Pickering, this court said, I don't care how many different ways you can describe it. In South Dakota, we're going to call it alienation of affection. That doesn't answer for us any part of the question in the DEC action, because we know what it's called here. It's called rights of privacy. And if rights of privacy include these types of conduct, violating the marital rights of privacy, then there is coverage, no matter what they call it when somebody sues the insured in the underlying lawsuit. We need to look at the State Farm package. And the State Farm package provides coverage for rights of privacy with no definition. And still to this day, in those briefs, there is no discussion of a true definition of rights of privacy, no discussion of the body of common law in South Dakota or in American jurisprudence.
Mr. Schoenbeck, what about the policy provision definition of personal injury? You know, it's curious that you don't see this anyplace else, but it specifically refers to the word or to the following offenses, which as Ms. Sabers pointed out, you know, implies something. It seems to me that, you know, because it's not used in other contexts, maybe this means something special here.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think what it means is that those are a collection of intentional acts. If you look, what follows that are all intentional acts. And I would suggest two other things to this court. One of them is it is inaccurate to say that the criminal code defines rights to privacy. There is no statute that does that. That is just a title that was put on a collection of statutes by code counsel. And secondly, the standard that we use in South Dakota for interpreting an insurance contract when there is an ambiguity is we look to see if it's fairly susceptible to different meanings. Rights of privacy is if it's susceptible to that it's defined by whatever the code counsel calls those statutes grouped together in that chapter of the criminal code, it is at a minimum also fairly susceptible that rights of privacy means what this court has said that it means. And unless you change the rules for interpreting insurance contracts, the definition can't be just what the title of a chapter is in the criminal code. It's got to at least include what this court has said, and those include wrongful intrusion into one's private activities. And it's not just about information. It's an allegation by David Kalt that Tom Harbert interfered with his private marital activities. That's the underlying allegation.
Then the next question is, how do you respond to Ms. Sabers' argument that Pickering says whatever label you put on this, it's got to come in as an alienation case?
In the underlying law, I agree. In the underlying lawsuit, no matter how you label it, it is an alienation case.
Well, if that's true as a matter of law, then this case is over.
Thank you, but it's not, because that's what you call it in the underlying suit. Here the question is rights of privacy. What does that mean? Does rights and privacy include within it violation of marital rights, the allegations that make up an alienation of affection claim? The rules here are those set forth by the words in the contract. That's the package, the State Farm package. If a violation, something that triggers coverage, has a different name in the underlying lawsuit, that doesn't matter. What matters is, when I bought that insurance and I got coverage for rights of privacy, did it reasonably include any of these types of claims? In Pickering, this court did not deny a remedy. This court just said that we're going to treat all of those different types of claims as this one type. But they didn't deny a remedy. They said there is a remedy for this act in the courts in the state of South Dakota. In this case, we need to find out, does rights of privacy, does that package, that word that they took, that phrase, the rights that they've said, we will provide insurance if you violate those for somebody, does it include violation of marital rights? That's what we need to know. And that definition is not in the policy. And that's what the Smith case said. Yeah, that's like alienation of affection is like violation of rights of privacy. That's reasonable to interpret it to include that. I just, again, would take you back to Bollinger. This is really about intent. And if you can prove the underlying tort by a presumption of intent, then that means that, in fact, it is not actual intent. And you can, in South Dakota, prove it with presumed intent. Bollinger says you can't use that presumption in a declaratory judgment action. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenbeck. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.